Ibra di testa, Tonali, gol! Sandro! Meritato! Sandro!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrood.
What's up guys, glad to be back. Happy Chinese New Year to those who celebrate the Chinese New Year. And we got Madison with us as well.
How you're so cultured, man. Sorry I missed last week. I wanted to take a nap, so I was like ready for this week and I wasn't yawning and stuff. So happy to be
back.
What
about the week before?
That's the week I was yawning. So
was it? I could have sworn it was 2 weeks in a row. Okay.
No. So happy to be here. No yawns. Let's get right.
Don't count me out yet.
Well, if I spot a couple of yawns, then next episode we might have to get a little tally done in the corner. Madison yawn count 1, 2, 3, 4. No, I mean it's understandable, mate. Young child and all that. I think people will have some sympathy with you on that front.
Oh,
I'm sure
okay,
they
cool.
do in the comments section. Anyway, yeah, we've got a rather depressing game to talk about. I'm torn between wanting to spend about 2 minutes on this and wanting to just absolutely rip the team apart for what is probably the most spineless display of the season. But the game that we've got to talk about is obviously the Inter Super Cup defeat, and then we've got the Lazio and Sassuolo games to preview. Bit of news to talk about. Maybe we're not done in January just yet. But let's start with the game that took place in midweek in Saudi Arabia at the King Fahd Stadium, the Super Cup between Milan and Inter. I think it would be fair to say both teams came into this in questionable form. Inter had won 3 out of 4 games so far this year, which isn't too bad, but there were more doubts surrounding them than certainties. And for us, we've been in a terrible run of form going into this game. We've won 1 out of 4 games to start the year, defence all over the place. Maybe in that sense, it kind of went true to form. But yeah, we lost 3-0 and it was a very forgettable night.
Yes.
Yes,
it was very
so forgettable. Yeah. I genuinely don't remember anything we did.
I didn't jog your memory.
Yeah, yeah. That was a shitty game. I know we went down quick, and then we went down again, and then we went down again, and that was about it.
Down bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't good. I mean, like, the Lecce game, the one that came previously, the criticism that you could level at the team is that we gave ourselves an absolute mountain to climb because we conceded 2 shit goals in the opening half an hour. So, I thought we're playing against a better opponent here, a team that likes to soak up pressure and hit others on the counter-attack. So, let's not be naive. Let's stay in the game for as long as we possibly can. Let's try to be at least defensively resilient. And, you know, if we go behind, then we make things very difficult for ourselves. 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes, we were a goal down, and it was a pretty fucking shambolic bit of defending. And just like the Lecce game, we were 2 goals down inside half an hour, and we were all resigned to defeat at that point. You know, that was the saddest thing about it. I think it kind of ruined the spectacle a little bit, the fact that we were so inept. But yeah, the first goal, just a simple passing move. They didn't even have to do anything that revolutionary to break us down. And as I say, this was inside 10 minutes when you've got to be looking to try and keep things solid. Massive area of space in midfield. Dzeko balling behind to Barella, across to DiMarco, who was totally unmarked at the far post. Slaps it in to make it 1-0. Then the second goal was this is the one that where it's like, first goal was a collective error. It was a collection of bad positioning, and Kier played Barella onside. I don't think he quite stepped up with the high line that we were trying to play to catch him offside there. But then the second goal was just, in my opinion, an individual error on Calabria, who was so far out of position, and then on Tonali, who for some reason decided to show Edin Dzeko back inside onto his right foot, you know, instead of taking him to the byline and making him cross on his weaker left foot. Don't really understand that. It's just the time that we're in at the moment. Like, every major decision we seem to be getting wrong defensively and going forward, it's just not good enough. Either you want to jump in at this point, or you're happy for me to just keep ranting.
The only other thing to talk about was Tomori's mistake on the third one for Lautaro. I mean, because we really didn't have any any big chances, big opportunities in the entire game. And I think that's the most worrying part about it is even like you could lose a game 3-0, but still be competitive, still be in it, you know, at points, like hitting shots off and they just have a wonderful defensive display. But that wasn't the case. We weren't taking shots. I mean, Liao had two, I think, and that was really it. Like, I can't remember any good offensive moments from us, any attacks going forward, and that's the worrying part. But as far as Tomori's mistake on the last goal, you know, the ball's coming over the top for Otaro, and him and Tomori are kind of tussling. Tomori's got his arm on him, and he's in front of Otaro. Like, he's got him beat. He's holding him back. The ball's coming over top, so it's going to land at his feet. Just, you know, hold him. Let it come to your feet and then kick it out or dribble from there and job done. But instead he tries to cut the ball off midair, like as it's incoming. And so he almost pushes Otaro in front of himself, like giving him the room, which he can't be offside. The pass was already made. So, you know, there's nothing but risk involved in that. And then he goes to head it and lo and behold, he misses the header. And now Otaro's just in on goal behind him and gets off an incredible outside of the foot shot that curled
it was a
in.
Nice finish.
It was one of the best finishes of the game, probably the best one. They're spoiled for choice, unfortunately, but yeah. So that was really bad from Tomori. Ironically, I thought Tataru Shanu looked better than anyone else in defense.
Could have been worse had it not been for him.
Yeah, he was tracking all the balls correctly, diving the right way on each shot, like. He at least made an effort to play and made an effort to win, which is good because that's something we haven't seen from him in a while. So,
I mean, there was certainly the opportunity for him to get his own back in terms of shouting at Tomori for that third goal if he'd really wanted to, you know.
And that shows the difference between an adult and an adolescent. So,
yeah, that's probably true as well. I did a tactical analysis for this game, and it wasn't really a tactical analysis. It was just, let's have a look at how bad the three goals we conceded were and try pick it apart, like, frame by frame to see what exactly happened. And the Tomori one, I've rewatched it. And times like this where I wish that we could relay what we could, like, put clips over this so I could, like, point it out. Mm-hmm. There are various angles that show it. I've rewatched it so many times. I do not understand for the life of me what he's trying to do. I really don't. I think, as you kind of said, AJ, he's the right side of Lautaro. He's goal side. He's making sure that he's not going to get rolled. And then as he knows that he can anticipate the ball, he almost lets Lautaro roll him. But then he gets caught between sort of holding on to him, and he could have gone down if he wanted to, and then making the lunge for the ball that would have cut out the pass. So then when the ball does eventually come, it's just totally past him. And all that came from like an aimless ball over the top from a free kick. So it wasn't even like they had to do anything to set up that particular play. And that'll probably be the easiest goal that Lautaro scores all season. It's just a complete brain fart from who was one of our most reliable defenders last year. And I think that goal perfectly sums up the current moment that we're in, to be honest. Because you've got players who before were such a strong point of this team, giving away goals, like giving them away for free. They had to do nothing to earn that goal. And that was the one that really hurt. And obviously it killed off the comeback. This game made me think of the season when Inter went on to win the league and they beat us 3-0 in the return derby. They scored twice in the opening half. And then we had that period for 15 minutes after halftime where we were absolutely all over them. We weren't necessarily all over them in this particular game, but it was certainly our best period in the game up to the hour mark. And then they score one up the other end to just completely kill it off. And it's like, you know, I saw the Italian media describing it as like, that would be the perfect Inzaghi performance, you know, against a team that perhaps had certainly a starting 11 that should compete. Arguably, we had a slightly stronger starting 11 because Inter had a couple of key players out. They just sat back, soaked up the pressure and sucker punched us, you know, twice, three times in the game. And that's it. You know, we never really looked in it. And it's at a time when we really needed a response. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you both about the patch of form that we're in? Like, how are we going to get out of it soon? Obviously, we've got a tough game coming up. Are the players just mentally shot? Is it tactical? Like, where are we at?
I think it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the players have the ability to get out of it. I just worry that Pioli doesn't have the ability to get them out of it.
That's kind of where my head's at, too. I think, I mean, obviously Pioli's comments, like, you can't read into them too much. But from earlier today, he said, like, I know what went wrong and I know what I have to do to fix it. But he didn't say what those things were. And he didn't actually say, I know what it was. It was more like the reporter said, do you know what's wrong? And he said, yeah. And then they said, do you know how to fix it? And he said, yeah. And that was the interview. So it wasn't really telling. It was, yeah.
The reporting question was Franco Ardenia, who he's had a couple of little tense moments with before, because Ardenia does do some pretty good features and columns criticizing certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think that he must be aware of that. And he should have known better than to ask a closed question like that, you know, yes or no. You should have said, what are you going to do to get the team out of this, rather than do you have what it takes to? Because it sounds like he's questioning his ability as a manager, you know, when he won the league last season. But continue.
But I do think that's honestly a fair criticism right now. I mean, that was everyone's criticism when he got appointed. That's kind of been my criticism of him since he got renewed. Like, obviously, yes, he won the Scudetto last season, but when he got appointed, nobody thought he was the guy to take us, you know, to a Champions League title. And I definitely don't think anyone does right now either. But yeah, I don't know. One through 10 on how worried I am, I'm going to say a 9. Lazio is a team I've always made fun of because I've been consistently there, flat track bullies. But right now we're playing like minnows. Right now we're playing like a team that's going to get bullied by a team like Lazio. If that's how our defense is looking the last 5 games, they're going to put 5 or 6 past us. You know, that's unless Pioli really does know what needs to happen and he's doing it, but it doesn't sound like it. It doesn't sound like he wants to do any tactical changes. It doesn't sound like he wants to change any lineup. So unless he magically becomes the world's greatest man manager and motivator, which I don't see happening. I know Zlatan returned to individual training this week, but is that enough? Is that enough to hype everyone? Probably not. So yeah, I mean, I'm not very optimistic. Yeah, Krunic is back. I mean,
woo-hoo. Mr. Reliable.
Like,
it's funny that, isn't it? Because he did, as you said there, he got asked about it in the press conference. Someone sort of said, "Are you pondering any tactical changes?" And in the past, he's always been very, very open about the idea. He sort of said, "Well, we can play with a 3-man defense if we want to. We've got the qualities to do it. We've done it before in games." This time, for some reason, he hit back with quite a cold, no, we have our principles, we've been working on them, and we'll show them again tomorrow. And it's just, there's just a slight shift in tone, I've noticed. He's getting kind of snappier in the replies and stuff. And I think we can all see that we're not balanced at the moment as a team, because we're making errors in both phases. We can't score enough goals and we can't keep them out. You know, we're getting ourselves in these holes by being a couple of goals down, and we're not going to be able to score 3 goals to get ourselves out of it every time. And I think a lot of people have been sort of campaigning for a change in formation to say a 4-3-3, so the back four is kind of shielded a bit more, and maybe we're a bit clear on the attacking front. But Pioli's just straight up dead batted it, and he's been like, no. We've got our principles. And I know he's not a big fan of formations. He sort of says that the movements are more important than having fixed positions, which I do agree with, to be honest. But nothing's happening. Like, none of the star players are performing. I think Teo and Giroud have been bad since they came back from the World Cup. Giroud's on his longest goal drought since he joined us. Liao was trying to do it all on his own in the Super Cup in particular, just kind of cutting inside and taking shots from anywhere, which I don't really blame him for at the moment. Brahim Diaz, again, doing this really annoying thing where he takes on the difficult runs and often wins fouls, but then passes the ball off when he should be driving into the space. He did that in the Super Cup. And then the right wing is obviously just an absolute hole at the moment. The we'll come on to tops and flops in a second, but the double pivot was probably the only thing that kind of kept us rolling over against Inter, especially when we had our better periods in the game. And then, yeah, the back four was just a shambles, and Tatarashan who kept us in it. But it's not happening at the moment, is it? It's not good. And
it's also the first time we've lost to Inter in a final out of 5. So that's kind of...
Seriously?
Strange. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, not good. And do you know what? That's the thing, like, you know, sometimes we've been able to look back at these derby losses against Inter and say, on another day if this had gone our way, or we can say, well, at least we competed and it was a good game. Obviously, we had the 3-2 win early this season as well, where you can look at it and say both teams gave it everything, and obviously we were delighted to emerge as the winners. But in this one, it's like there are no positives. We were outplayed. It was like, not necessarily outplayed. One. Go on.
And it's really funny and ironic coming from me, and especially a takeaway from a 3-0 loss. But if Tata plays the way he played in the Super Cup against Lazio, I don't think we concede a goal. Because I thought Tata was on point the whole game.
He was.
But he did really well. So, I mean, if he's magically developed goalkeeping ability, then I'm all for it, obviously. Still would rather see Davis Vasquez and obviously want Mike back. But if Tata wants to play like that, then please do, because no one else in defense is playing. So if that's what we got, that's what we got.
Yeah, when that second goal went in from Dzeko, I initially said, because me, Lorenzo and Stefano went to Milan Club London to watch the game. I think it's the first time I've ever seen us lose when going there, so that was another blow. But when I first saw the replay, I thought Tata Reshanu could have done better, because it was a narrow angle that Dzeko shot from. But then when you see it from behind, you see how good a shot it was, you know, and he's a marksman. He's same age as Giroud, and yet he just seems to offer so much more to them than what Giroud does to us. But that's a whole other discussion, probably, because they play with the front two and everything. But yeah, Tata Reshanu was pretty solid, I would say. Made that good save off Skriniar, that flick from the corner. If that had gone in, then it would have been 3-0 before half-time, and it could have been a really messy scoreline, to be honest. And yeah, there's not an awful lot to go on at the moment. In terms of positives, doesn't look like we're going to get a ton of help from the market either, but Maldini and Pioli have sort of accepted that as the way it is. I know there's some rumours doing the rounds at the moment, which we will talk about, but tops and flops, and then we'll wrap it up. Top for me is Bennacer, and there's not a big list of names to choose from. Tata Reshanu is not actually a bad shout, and when AJ goes for him, I'll say that's fair choice. But I think Bennacer was probably the orchestrator of what was our only good 15 minutes in the game. Yeah, not good.
Yeah, I'm going Tata Reshanu. I mean, yeah.
As a top or a flop?
As a top.
As a top.
Damn, look at you. I'll be honest. I was in back-to-back sales meetings for the game, so I did not watch it.
I'm so jealous. I could have been, but I said, no, I'm going to take the day off. I'm going to use a vacation day for this. I should have saved it. I should have saved it.
It's the first derby I've missed in years, and I'm kind of happy I did. So God. I was trying to look for ratings, but I couldn't pull them up fast enough. So I will recuse myself, step back.
Yeah. Yeah, not good. I'll tell you as well another thing. And it's easy to say this when you've lost the game in the way that we did, but the whole occasion felt a bit strange to me. I mentioned before on the podcast that I'm not a huge fan of it being in Saudi Arabia. I feel like the game would hold a whole lot more meaning if it were held in Italy, but I do understand why they've outsourced the game overseas, because obviously they pay to host it, and the teams and the league get some money from that. But this was the last year of the contract that Lega Serie A signed with Saudi Arabia to host the game. So they're kind of looking for a new venue again. But I just feel like the game would have felt so much more significant if it were played in front of a packed San Siro. But that's the way it is.
Yeah, it definitely did have like preseason vibe to it.
Mm. Yeah.
Not to discredit Inter. They absolutely deserved it. So
no, but I think as well, like the 2011 Super Cup, the last time we played Inter in it, that had a bit of a strange vibe to it as well. And not many people talk about that as a result. You know, it was a final between the two teams from the city, and we won. We came from behind. Boateng scored, Ibra scored. Like, that game doesn't get talked about at all really anymore. And I think that's the reason. It was held in Beijing, and it does have a bit of a spruced up pre-season friendly or mid-season friendly feel to it.
Is played halfway through the season. I think if it's the final game before the kickoff of the real season, then it's heavier. Then it has meaning. Then it's like if then it to me it feels like more of a trophy, because the reality is it's the trophy between the winners of the league and the winners of the cup, the two best teams in the league or the nation going head to head to determine up the better of them. You know, like, it's a small trophy, but you only get to compete by winning the biggest or the second biggest in the nation, you know? So it's a weird mentality going into it. And if it's the first game before the season starts, then it's like, all right, this is really closing that final chapter of the previous season. Now we're gung-ho into the real one, and people can give their all. But midway through the season, when we're both teams are in a Scudetto race and they have points to gain on Napoli, like, is it worth giving your all, risking more injuries when you have 19 more games to play to determine the winner? Like, you know, I think it just kind of waters it down a bit. And at that point, you've also had the entire summer transfer window to change up your team and most of the January window. Like, hypothetically, it could be two teams that had nothing to do with those title winning teams from the previous season. So I don't know. It's just weird placement in the middle of the season. If you do it in the beginning, you could do it locally, or you could do it abroad, and it doesn't feel as out of place, I think. But, like, what's the point when you're playing Lecce 1 week, and then you got to fly to Saudi Arabia for this one game just to fly back to play,
that's, you know, the thing,
right after? It's weird. It's unnecessary.
Yeah, it messes up the whole schedule as well, because, like, now obviously we're playing tomorrow night against Lazio, Inter playing tonight, and... you know, other teams have got a longer break between games because they weren't partaking in the Super Cup. That's what it is, I suppose. You especially the league, the way it is, they're going to go where the money is. But I quite like the idea of it being a sort of curtain raiser game, you know, like something to kick off the season a week before the regular season starts. And I think it, even if it were still to be in the Middle East or in the Far East somewhere, like, teams are out there for training camps anyway, so it wouldn't make a huge amount of difference to have it there. But
the season start earlier this year, so that's why it was.
Yeah, it did because of the World Cup, but it has been typically a mid-season.
Okay, yeah. I also think it should be held in Italy or the United States, but that one's.
I was going to say, yeah,
that would be cool though. No, on a serious note, that would be cool. You know, if they did something. I mean, I understand they're trying to grow the game in certain markets, but then the narrative that we're fed is that Italian clubs are already established in the Middle East and Far East, and it's already a big market there. So, like, surely you want to grow your exposure in other markets. I'm not saying have the game at MetLife Stadium or anything, but yeah. I think that there are things that you could do.
I do think if it was in the U.S., the people in attendance would be mostly neutrals, which can help the crowd if it's, you know, if it's an exciting game with lots of goals, but you're not going to get like the TIFOs or anything. And that's another issue. When was the last time you saw a derby without some big TIFOs or big demonstration pregame? And well, it's the ones
probably
that are
2011.
It's the ones out of the country. So, yeah. You know, it's
a little there was that way, but 500 fans in total that traveled from Italy, from Milan and Inter's respective curvas. 500, out of the attendance.
That's an expensive travel.
It's a long trip, and you know, it's and a lot of them are unemployed. As in quite literally, their job is the curvas and doing the banner, and they make their money that way. But yeah, it is quite a big trip.
Where do I
apply?
Commitment.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll chalk it. Oh shit, we've got flops to do tomorrow for me. That area was terrible. The organization was all over the place defensively in general. I spoke about this when we were on with Lorenzo about the idea of starting Kier in the back four, and you and Lorenzo were all for it, and I was just a bit hesitant to say, like, the defense has not been performing all season, no matter what combination we put out there. And to throw in a 33-year-old who hasn't started since coming back from an injury problem and think that'll be fine against two of the best strikers in the league was going to be wishful thinking. And it unfortunately turned out that way. I don't think Kier dropped a 2 out of 10 or anything, but he played his man onside for the first goal by not stepping up quick enough, and him and Tomori just didn't seem to have that understanding. But because of that third goal, I have to give it to Tomori. Like, he was all at sea.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I do think it's harsh to give it to Tomori just because it was the third goal, and at that point we had already accepted defeat, I think.
Mm.
I want to say Calabria, but I know I'll catch heat for that because people either absolutely despise him or love him with an undying defense no matter what he does. But I'm going to go with Calabria. I feel like that second goal, which was Tonali's fault, but the reality is Calabria was so far up the pitch, he wasn't even in our half when that happened, and it came from his side. So it's like, what are you doing that far out of position, and why is the midfielder who isn't meant to be defending in our own box the guy tracking back to cover their striker? Like, yeah, he got turned. He looked stupid, Tonali did, but he's not supposed to be there. It's like when people got mad at Macias for giving away that penalty. It's like, well, why are we forcing a right winger to defend anyways, you know? So It's one of those situations. So you look at who put him in that situation, and to me, that's Calabria for being so far up the pitch.
You can make an argument as well about the first goal, because for some reason he tucks in and covers the man that should probably be covered by a centre back, and then DiMarco spots that, goes on that bombing run, and it's him who is found absolutely all alone at the far post when that should have been Calabria's man if everyone. But that was on Teo as well, that first goal. He didn't follow the run of Barella at all. He just let him go behind it. Yeah, fair pick. And Maddie, you're absolved, I suppose, since you didn't watch. But if you were to just throw a dart at our team sheet, you'd probably hit a player who had a bad performance. So.
Yeah, honestly, anyone in defense was a good pick.
Yeah, let's move on then. Let's preview tomorrow's game against Lazio. Obviously, we're recording this on Monday. This is going to be a tough trip to the capital. We always have tough games against them. We won last year, obviously. That was a massive turning point in terms of momentum in the Scudetto race. The last-minute winner from Sandro Tonali. The second-half comeback in front of, like, I don't know, it was like 8,000 fans, I think, who travelled down, and this will be a tough one as well, because if all of a sudden we've gone from Scudetto battle to top four battle, Lazio are part of the chasing pack. They're not having a bad season, really. They're currently in sixth place, 3 points off Roma in fourth. They come into the game off the back of a 2-0 win against Sassuolo, but they've also lost two of their last four. They lost 3-0 at Juve, and they lost away at Lecce. Their last home game, they drew 2-2 against Empoli. So they're a bit all over the place form-wise. The highest they've been this season is second. And they, as I say, they're currently just outside the top four. They haven't got Ciro Immobile for this game, though. And he is someone who loves a goal against us. But he will be injured. He's going to miss about the next month, apparently.
Also, based on home and away form, both teams sit in fifth. So Milan is fifth on away, Lazio's fifth at home. So it's going to be a good game.
Good start.
Or it's going to be a dud.
0-0 draw.
Oh, God. Yeah, this.
The guys have had a lot of time to rest. It's been almost a week, right?
Well, they did get 2 days off after the Super Cup performance, which blew my fucking mind. Like, at what point are we going to just sit down and say, hey, we need to get our heads back in the game and take a retiro and fucking dig in? Like, we haven't won in four games. We got two embarrassing losses and two embarrassing draws. So
who else did we lose to besides Inter? I thought we just drew twice.
Torino in the cup.
Oh, that's right.
10 men Torino in the cup. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Lazio, I won't go as far as to say that they're leaky, because they've got a better defensive record than us with 15 conceded in their first 18 games. But they conceded 5 in their first 11 games. And since then, they've been a little bit, they've been struggling to get clean sheets. And as said, no Immobile is definitely a bonus for us, because he always likes scoring against us. But Felipe Anderson is in decent form. Well, decent-ish form, and Milinkovic-Savic seems to be back to his best, and Luis Alberto's patched things up with Sarri. So they've still got weapons to hurt us. Zaccagni's really good. We missed out on him. Yeah, he was one of the players that was linked during the summer.
Yeah. Not to mention, they have Romagnoli, who, former player, they always show up.
Might bet on him to score a header from a corner or something, you know?
Yeah, and he had some words about us, too, that weren't as favorable last week.
I didn't hate his words, to be honest. In fact,
I agree with him. I agreed with
yeah. you. Yeah, I'll read them out just because I don't want to paraphrase in any way. But he was talking obviously about his Milan exit in the summer and about his decision to join Lazio. And he said, regarding the renewal with Milan, there could have been a bit more clarity from the start. In the end, everyone took their own path. I had many offers, but my will was to go to Lazio. At Milan, I have only fantastic memories. So I think what he's having a dig at is that the club left it ambiguous as to whether they wanted him to stay. And that's kind of what the reports were suggesting. You know, there was Di Marzio who was saying for like the last few months of his contract that we had no plans to offer him a new one and that he was going to be leaving on a free. And then it became, we're willing to offer him one, but at like half of what he was currently earning. And, you know, Scudetto winning captain departs for a lesser club ultimately, but his boyhood team. And I think I mentioned this last week. I think our defensive rotations would feel a bit safer if we still had him. But I don't begrudge him the move either. You know,
I mean, at the end of the day, he's in his prime right now. He's 28 years old. As a defender, that's when you're at your peak. You know, like you're.
Yeah, but he hadn't hit form for probably two seasons with us.
Well, he also got injured.
He was on and off.
And I agree with that 100%. But when you look at who our backups are, in Gabbia,
but Kier, was he gonna Chow, like stay and agree to back up? He was captain.
I think he would have.
I want to know I'd like to know how much percentage wise was like his role in the squad versus the money thing. You know.
Yeah, and that's true too. But also, he wouldn't have known this at the time, but we had Calabria and Florenzi out for so long, like he would have been starter for the first half of the season, you know?
He would, yeah. And that's why you need, if you're going to build your team around pairings, as we do, we build our team around the centre-back pairing that was really strong for us last season, the full-back pairing and the balance that offers, the double pivot. You're going to build your team around pairings, you need a quality third player for those pairings. You do, like, you know, Tomori Kalulu was fantastic. They were basically undroppable. But Romagnoli knew the system well enough to step up in case one of those was out. And obviously, with the injuries, as you mentioned, Kalulu would have been shifted over to right back and everything would have felt a bit better there as well. Like, we lost Kessi and we don't have a quality third-choice midfielder. Then there was, like, the crazy post-lockdown season when we had Dalot, who was able to play both left-back and right-back. He struggled at the start. There's no two ways about it. However, by the end of the season, everyone was calling to explore a permanent deal. And now here we are where he won't even play Balotelli. Obviously, he's injured at the moment, but he wouldn't even play Balotelli. He'd rather play Dest out of position at left back. You know, so it goes to show, I think we're missing some of those sort of what I'd call padlock players, the ones who you could turn to and think, yeah, we're going to get 6 out of 10 out of them.
Yeah. The only other thing I would add is Provedel is a fantastic keeper. He's got 10 clean sheets this season already in 18 games. So,
I like Provedel.
Yeah, it's going to be tough with our shooting out of form like this and our defense out of form like this. They're a high scoring team that doesn't concede a lot. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. I think there's no team news really that's come out for us, to be honest. There's normally at least a predicted Sky 11 or Milan news to go on, but there isn't. But it sounds like if we take Pioli's words at face value, we're not going to be starting a 4-3-3, and therefore it'll probably be a similar team to the one that started the Super Cup game. Benacer,
it'll be the exact same one.
I want to say Benacer's suspended. He picked up a fifth yellow card in the Super Cup, so I think he's banned for this game.
That rolls over.
Yeah. Because it's domestic.
It's so confusing on what rolls over and what doesn't.
Yeah, no. That's the thing. Without any predicted 11s to go on, I don't know if that's actually true or not. But yeah. Score predictions then, everyone.
Well, so, and obviously this is just a placeholder 11, but on FUTMOB, it has Benacer in their starting 11. It doesn't list him as suspended.
And he did not get a yellow card in the Super Cup.
Oh. I thought he did.
Per Google,
He got one against in Lecce. Lecce, Roma.
Right, ignore me then. Ignore me.
Yeah, he's only on 4. Yeah, so we're good.
Okay. Right, fine. Oh, that's it. We've won.
Yeah, we're done. We did it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 2-1, us.
Oh, God, I'd love that. I'm going... You know what? this is the opposite of what I've ever done, but I'm just so disenchanted with this team right now that I can't confidently predict a win until we get one again. So yeah. Right now I'm going 2-0 for Lazio.
Yeah. That's mine as well. I think we lose this. I don't, as I say, they're kind of like chasing pack. Obviously they're at home. It's difficult ground to go to. And yes, they don't have Immobile, but they've shown they can score goals without him. We've shown that we can't score goals or keep them out with our first choice 11 out there. I think this is a game where either something clicks for us and we put on a really, really good performance and we get the win and a few of the doubts are hopefully resolved, or the rot goes even deeper. I don't see an in-between with this. I don't see a 1-1 draw or a boring game or anything. It just feels like two teams that are going to have to trade blows, and whoever comes out on top is massive for them.
Go ahead.
No, this is not. This is like going to take us down the rabbit hole, so I'll let you go first.
Well, it might be. Mine might do the same. I was going to say, I wonder if the Juventus point deduction, which we'll get to, I'm sure, at some point, but I wonder if that's going to give the team an extra boost. Like, okay, that just knocked off one competitor for top four, because I think that's our goal at this point. I don't think we're aiming for the Scudetto anymore. I wonder if that's going to give us anything, you know, like, and derbies tend to be turning points, so maybe that's something they're like, wow, we just lost 3-0. We just had fucking Hakan chanting in our face. Like, we got to get that back. So maybe it motivates them. Maybe it does it. Maybe it crushes them. And
I mean, in the past, they've kind of been turning points. I feel like after we have had a big loss to Inter, we kind of go on a skid for a while.
Yeah.
But my wonder is, if we just start crashing and burning, right, end up finishing fifth, does Jerry invest this summer, or does he just continue to play how it's been going?
Yeah, I don't think he will invest, but I do think he'll sack everyone.
The thing is, right, I think we kind of touched on this last week, but I think if we don't get Champions League, he'll spend more than if we do. As weird as that sounds.
No, yeah.
The panic button is pressed when you don't get top four. So you have to spend more to accommodate for the fact that you're perceived as weaker. Whereas if we do get in the Champions League, we sort of bank on being able to persuade players with that. And, you know, the budget might just be a case of targeted additions because we've already got a top four squad and that's all anybody wants. You know, I mean, it's such a far cry from the interview that Maldini gave back in May after we'd won the league, where he said, you know, this team is 2-3 quality additions away from doing good things in the Champions League. He spoke about sort of the need for investment, but obviously within certain parameters. And now we're just kind of accepting, even though the squad's in a bit of a crisis, that we're probably not going to sign anybody this month.
The irony that he said the squad was 2-3 good signings away from going far in the Champions League, and then we only got one bad signing, not in one of the positions necessary, like, blows my fucking mind. How can a sporting director say that and then have the market he did? Well, and that's not even supposed to be an attack on CDK. It's just like those positions that we all knew were right wing and striker. And so we got a attacking mid that hasn't performed. Like, I don't know. It's just weird.
At what point do you start to blame Pioli for doing the same thing?
I started blaming him in October, so that's when I jumped on the wagon.
Because, like, CDK can play right wing, right? Why didn't he test it out there? Why do you play Macias and Salamakers every single game, who do absolutely nothing to contribute to the squad?
Yeah. If you look at CDK's heat map for the whole season combined, he primarily is playing in the right wing position for whatever reason, which it creates a hole in the midfield, and that's not good. And obviously, if he's playing up top, like, that's creating a hole up top then, you know. So you might as well play him where he's going to be playing anyways and fill the spot with someone who will stay in the spot. Like, I know Pioli's preaching this, like, formations don't matter, give him the freedom to move or whatever, but maybe that's why we're having an issue. Because we're leaving holes everywhere, because we have the freedom to move. So maybe if we get a little strict and say, this is your area, you control this area and don't fucking leave it, maybe, who knows, maybe we won't concede 3 goals a game. Just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a
couple. How many times have we conceded three goals this game this season?
The most recent time was Wednesday.
Last week.
But I don't
know. I don't think we've conceded three goals.
I think anything like
more. Two to Lecce, two to Roma, three to Eindhoven.
Goals is
four to Liverpool.
Okay. Yeah. Preseason games.
I mean, those were recent, though. We did it to Chelsea. Napoli was two. We've conceded a lot of goals this season.
Yeah, we've not got many clean sheets. I think it's like four.
I think we have four, and it's Tata on two and Mike on two.
Yeah, it's not good enough. You know, it's not good enough.
Tata might have three, but that's only because he's played quadruple the games.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, don't know. I feel like the switch to a 4-3-3 was and still is probably the most logical thing to do at the moment, but Pioli seems to suggest that we're not going to be changing the system anytime soon. We'll see if that's a bluff or not. Anyway, let's move on. Do you know who's shit? Sassuolo are shit this season. They have not been good under Dionisi so far this season. They are just above the bottom three, actually. They've got 17 points from 19 games. They drew yesterday against Monza away. They were a goal up in that and weren't able to get the win. They've actually, prior to that, they'd lost 6 out of 7 with a draw coming against Roma, the rest being defeats and only scoring twice in that run of losses, which isn't good. And they also got knocked out in the round of 64, if that's such a thing, of the Coppa Italia by Modena. They lost 3-2. So they're not having a good season. So when you look at them being in the top half, be it 10th, 9th, whatever, they're down there this season. But Sassuolo at home seems to be a bit of a cursed game for us. So, I mean, how are we supposed to feel about this?
Yeah, when was the last time we lost to them?
Last season.
Okay.
But the last time Sassuolo won was October 24th. We were undefeated that time. So that should tell you a lot. And before that, they went on a losing streak as well. So, I mean, they're not a
good. I'm pretty confident that we're going to beat them.
Brother, yeah. I don't know if I'm there with you, but I understand why you think that.
Yeah.
I don't know. They've conceded 29 goals. So.
Yeah, these games are always annoyingly hard to predict. I'm just looking down the squad, though. The amount of players that we have been linked with that are here, and I guess are struggling because the team are struggling in general, but you've got Agustin Alvarez, who was kind of signed to replace Scamacca. Davide Fratese, they were linked with pretty much every window. Yanis Antiste, those who follow the news will remember him being linked with us when he was at Toulouse. Hamed Traore, Maxime Lopez, Martin Ehrlich, who joined from Spezia. These are all names that have been linked with us. And as I say, they can't be doing particularly brilliant this season. I don't know. I don't back us to win. Do you know what the worst thing about this is as well? It's a Sunday early kickoff.
Fuck.
So, yeah.
Hey, at least I'll be up.
Be here for this game. I'll be on a fucking plane. So,
where are you going?
I'll be coming back from Florida. I'm going for 17 hours. So,
why?
Yeah. My mom's birthday. My dad's throwing a surprise party, so we're flying in.
Hopefully, she doesn't watch podcasts.
Not a surprise anymore.
She doesn't. She doesn't watch it. Trust me.
I'm gonna clip it and put it out there. Put it on Facebook and all kinds.
Yeah,
of shit.
Put it on his Facebook wall.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm just looking at the team that Sassuolo line up with. The forward group, you've obviously got Berardi still on the left wing. Traore is the number 10. Fratesi playing in midfield. This guy called Lloriente on the left wing. But they're playing Grégoire Defrel up front. Now, he was the guy who scored the winning goal when Sassuolo beat us last season. So once on... Yeah, I think he was. I think he was the guy who sat Romagnoli down in that embarrassing way. But I'd have to check that. But yeah, I'm not going to slander him too much as a result. But something's kind of gone wrong there if you're having to play him up front. I don't know, man. I can't predict a win. But I'm going to have to, just so I don't seem too negative. And I don't think we keep a clean sheet. I think we win 2-1.
Well, I'm also not going to predict a win, but I am going to predict a clean sheet. I'm going 0-0.
I'm going 2-1 as well.
You're picking a win, though?
We're going to win.
Okay, there you go. We got them all. We got all the results.
We've not had a penalty in a while. No, I said 2-1 win as well, just to,
oh,
to
you
not
did?
Be
okay.
negative. Yeah,
you know, for conceding so much, we're still plus 29 goals at the season on the season.
Our goal difference is plus 29. No, it's not.
I'm looking at it could be
goals scored.
Oh, average simulated season. I'm looking at something different, so I'm wrong.
Our goal difference is 15, which is one better than Inter. It's six better than Roma. It's one better than Atalanta, even.
But that's good for 32. Our scoring troubles.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yep.
And only be what, 9 points behind Napoli, and they're plus 32, right?
Just the nine points behind Napoli.
Okay, 32.
Three full games.
That's 17 goals in three games, though. That's not, you know, like, that's, you know.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
They're conceding a lot as well, I guess. I don't know what I'm saying, but it makes
Napoli?
Sense in my head.
You think Napoli's conceding a lot?
They've conceded less
than anyone else in the league.
If they're plus 32, but only 9 points ahead of us, what am I trying to say?
It just means they're scoring.
Where are you going with this?
I don't know. Yeah. This is a Sempre Napoli podcast, apparently.
Yeah. It's because they put five past fucking Juve. You know, they score a lot of goals.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find... Okay,
listen,
the last time they didn't score more than
two
goals
on,
was...
Because I just dug myself into a hole that I can't
get. Yes.
That might be worse than yawning. Just going down a rabbit hole of Napoli don't score enough. Napoli concede too many goals and they're only 9 points ahead of us. That might be the funniest thing we've had on the pod for a while. News, anyway, let's do some news. The main one is that we may or may not make an attempt to sign Nicola Zaniolo from Roma late in the window. Pretty much every single reliable source is now saying this. Di Marzio saying it, Milan News. All those are saying that we're interested. But there seems to be a split between whether we're going to try for a summer move and whether we're going to get the go-ahead to do sort of a loan with option or loan with obligation to buy a deal in the last few days of the window. He was left out of the squad to play Spezia, which suggests Roma are kind of looking for a solution on that front. His contract expires in 2024. He's not having a fantastic season, nor has he had a great season for a while because of his injury problems. Is it still a good signing or not? You know, because Zaniolo has been hyped up as one of the sort of future pillars of Italian football. And because of his injuries, he hasn't got there. But you can't argue that on his day, he's still a very good player.
I mean, I've seen him get really close to scoring quite a few times this season. But ultimately, that means I've seen him not score a lot this season. I do think that a new club reinvigorates a player, like if they have something to prove and things like that and they want out. I also think we need changes, so I'm surprisingly not against it, even though I was all last summer. Also because the price has been cut in half and now a loan is possible as well. I don't think he's the right move, but I think the thought process here over, say, a Ziyech who has been offered to two clubs now, which is crazy that we're not all over that, but... the thinking is Zaniolo's Italian. He counts where it's homegrown. That gives us the opportunity to offload Pobega, who right now we can't because we need those homegrown. So I could see why that makes
Pobega
sense.
Also scores.
I was there when he scored. That was good.
Sorry about that. So all that to say, go for it. Do something. Also, Di Marzio just released a probable 11 for this upcoming game tomorrow. And surprise, surprise, zero changes to the lineup.
Okay, good fun.
Good thing he decides who plays 24 hours before the game.
Yeah, he's not normally wrong, though.
I don't know. I never look at his predicted lineup. So
Do you know, the thing is, it's funny that you say that about making zero changes when we're talking about potentially adding a new right winger, because I just think that our 11, if you stick Zaniolo on the right wing, all of a sudden looks a lot better. But... can't argue that it's been like 3 or 4 years now since his best season. When his best season is 8 goals, And that's not amazing. I had in my head that he'd had a sort of Chiesa level season where he scored 15 goals and got that.
I think he just had a bunch of assists, didn't he?
Yeah, probably, which would be good. Anything would be good from the right hand side at the moment. I'm with you. Basically, I don't think that he is the right profile, nor is he. I mean, he definitely represents a risk, but he's not necessarily the right investment for the.
When
for the
have
right
we
wing.
Bought a player that did not represent a risk?
Yeah, great question.
Yeah, Mania.
So he's perfect for us.
Yeah, that much is true, and we like signing players that have had injury problems. Thank you, Divock.
How funny is that? That the last signing we made that wasn't deemed to be risky was Maignan, and he's been gone for, you know, a total of 10 months out of his two seasons. Like,
Yeah, I can see why we are considering the risk, though, basically. We are not in a position where we could shop for Zaniolo in his best form. We've kind of got to buy on the dip. Or by young players who are not proven. You know, we cannot be spending 60, 70 million euros on ready-made wingers. That's just the market that we're shopping in. So I can see why we are evaluating the risk. If he can stay healthy, he's a definite upgrade on the right wing. If he arrives and, you know, he only plays 50% of the games, then it's going to reflect badly. I put in the chat yesterday, this is the kind of move where Maldini and Massara hang their reputation, like, on the line. You know, because if it pays off, it fixes a problem and they look like they've got a bargain and it's like, these guys are geniuses. If it's terrible, then it's just yet another player that we've signed who was injury prone, who has no impact, who, you know, doesn't fit in whatever it might be. So this would be a big move if they decided to go for it. And I agree. I'm surprised as well because Ziyech seems to be much more available and yet those links have gone, and now we're going for. I mean, I know Zaniolo's on 23. There's some potential there still. Knows the league, Italian, as you said, but I don't know, man. It seems a strange one.
Well, Ziyech is linked to Roma, so it's like the player we should be getting is going to replace the player we are getting. What does that tell
He's
you?
He's going to Everton, yeah. Man.
They'll be replacing us in the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's do some questions and then wrap up.
We don't want to discuss Juve at all.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about it then, shall we?
This is the Sempre Juve podcast.
No, I mean...
We're talking about cheaters here.
Look, we want one exciting thing on this episode, okay?
We can talk about what it means for Milan.
Lack of knowledge of goal differential.
Our goal difference is plus 15. Juve got minus 15 points.
Hey, really enjoyed that.
They also did a 15% discount on tickets for the game yesterday, so...
And it still was empty. Cool. That was hilarious.
Empty. It was empty. There was about 7,000 people there.
So, you don't paint your seats white. Like, it just shows you when no one's in it, you know?
Yeah. NASCAR does it, like, colorful. So that way, when the cameras are going, it looks like people in T-shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because NASCAR's a sport.
NASCAR. Do you know, like... There's been games before, usually against worse opponents than Atalanta. Like, it's not a bad game to go and see. There's been games before where Juve have had a lot of stick for their crowds. And I'm surprised that nobody's tried to come out and say, oh, the attendance was poor because everyone's protesting about the judgment or whatever, you know, to cover it up that way. And then you can go back and look at the Empoli game where they had 20,000 fans there or whatever. They're not actually that well supported in Turin, though, by all accounts. Like, Torino are better supported in the city, which is understandable. But yeah, 15 points knocked off. Good draw for mid-table Juve against Atalanta last night. They're now ninth, dizzy heights. What does it
it's
mean
cool
for us?
Because Juve is a good enough team in reality to scalp some points off the bigger clubs. And now that they're this low in the table, we could actually count on a Juve win to not knock points off our competitors since Juve no longer is one. Yeah. So... yeah, that's great.
Well, I mean, I'm
curious how, after their UEFA ban comes in as well, if it does, I'm curious how it affects them in the long run. Because their players are going to ask to leave, at least 50% of them, right?
Yeah.
Then, you know, there's no money finishing. They could still finish top, but they don't get the UEFA money. So in 3 years, what kind of financial position is Juve going to be in, and are they going to be able to bounce back?
We'll I have a feeling that they're going to bounce back. They won't report it.
Zing.
Yeah, I mean, they bounced back from relegation.
Yeah, but that was a way different time.
It was, yeah, yeah.
And they bounced back by cheating.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, look.
I don't know. I think it's a really good point.
The first point is it's good to see cheaters punished, you know? Mm-hmm. You had a lot of Juve fans who were kind of bragging about their creative accounting and saying that, you know, that they were being clever by circumventing the system like that. But now we're in a position where the investigation has shown that they were not honest about a lot of different things. The Juve narrative from their fan base, from what I can sort of encapsulate on social media, has changed from "we did nothing wrong" to it wasn't only us, you know? So it's pretty quickly deflected to some whataboutery, which is good fun. And now the defense mechanism seems to be go and cancel all your subscriptions to everything because it'll hurt the league in the pocket when it's the money they need from the league to help, you know, regenerate their finances and stuff.
And so also, they're deluded. They're not the most supported or watched club in Italy. And I looked that up. Since the 2020-2021 season, since the turn of the decade, they haven't even been the top two most watched clubs. Milan has been number one, and then Inter second, then Juve, then Napoli. And this season, whose numbers haven't come out, are almost guaranteed to be Napoli on top. I mean, how could it not be? Like, they're definitely the best team in the league. So it's going to be them, and Juve's going to drop off even more, especially if they cancel their viewership because all those illegal streams, because they're still going to watch, don't count towards viewership. So,
because they're cheaters.
Yeah, exactly. So it's silly to think that they were going to do that anyways, that it's going to hurt the league, that the league can't survive without them. I think the reality is the world over, at least here in the U.S., even in high school when I would mention supporting an Italian team, the pushback was always by like non-soccer fans was, why not a Prem team? Aren't the Italian teams corrupt? Like, isn't that just a league of cheaters? Yeah. Like, and that's
the
view that they have on it. It's also accurate. Yeah. But it's because of Juventus. And if you get rid of that cancer to the league, to the nation, then all of a sudden the world starts healing, you know, and everyone's looking at it like, oh, maybe this is a legitimate league again. Like, that team who's at the root of every scandal is now gone. And now we know that it is commendable, true sporting behavior, and we could just watch it and enjoy. And I think the league would go up and benefit a lot by the liquidation of Juventus. So,
I'll tell you what, not even the Italians who are part of Sempre Milan rep Italy that well. So good job.
Yeah, you should be in charge of PR for Serie A. I think you do a better job.
Look, all you got to do is say one positive thing and you're doing better. So
yeah, and not completely diminish every single other campaign that you've got going with some bizarre art prints or whatever. I have a gut feeling that this investigation and because obviously the investigation happened and it was recommended to the federal prosecutor that 15 points are deducted. So that's what's happened. That's effective immediately. But it's already been appealed to the CONI. I've got a feeling that that's going to drag on. I don't know what happens at the end of it, but apparently they can only either completely remove the points deduction, so they go back to where they were, or uphold it. So we're either looking at, you know, this is how it's going to be, and then as Maddie says, what happens with Europe, with UEFA, if they decide to investigate things as well, because obviously falsified documents pertain to FFP as well, then that could be really interesting. It could set them back years in what they're trying to do. But just be honest, you know, that's the
right.
And I think they're going to lose that appeal simply because of the all or nothing aspect of it, because there's no way they could look at all the evidence and say, you don't deserve a punishment. You know, they can look at it and say, like, 15 might be a little harsh, but you got to get something. You can't just get away free with this. So, you know,
relegation was obviously the thing that we were all kind of giddy
hoping
about.
For.
You know? The idea that, like, they could potentially be docked, because the only way you could do it is probably to dock them 50 points or something, maybe even more, and then basically guarantee that they're relegated so they can play out the rest of the season, but then they start division below. But I saw a tweet, and I can't remember who it was by now, There's a team called Campobasso who were in Serie C, and they owed the taxman 94,000 euros that they couldn't pay. And their punishment was that they had their league license totally revoked. So they essentially dissolved as a club. And yet here we are with talking about 15 points, you know. They could still finish in the European places, to be totally honest, even with this points deduction. I don't know if dissolving the club is, you know, but we're talking about tens of millions here, not 94,000. And yet the precedent has been set that they have their league license taken away from them. Plenty more fallout to come on this. I think it's fun to look at from the outside. Do I worry about the long-term impact on the league? It'll become fairer. But is the league as attractive as a brand without Juventus? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. My gut feeling is no, it's not. Because if you lose a big club, just like if you lose a top four club in the Premier League, I think it's a bit
tough. It's kind of like if Manchester United got caught cheating. Because they're a domestic giant, but they're not a European giant, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because Juve is not a European giant, but they're a domestic giant. But they're a domestic giant because they cheat.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison. It's sort of like if you say, obviously we can speak about this objectively as not being fans of any top-level Premier League side. Isn't that right, Maddie?
I like the bottom half more.
Yeah, it's good down there. Lamps been sacked today, so everyone's happy.
He fucking better.
But we can say if you remove you severely punish Manchester United, the Premier League is not as big a product as it was before. But if it's done for a legitimate reason, then everybody kind of understands it. And also the scandal does drive traffic. It does drive interest towards your league.
Yeah, it's drama.
Yeah, it is.
People love drama.
They do. They do.
But also all those fans, like, they're not going to stop watching the sport. Maybe very few of them, but they're just going to pick a new club. None of them are turn-based anyway, so they're just going to find a new team to support, and the viewership's going to stay the same. It's just going to be more equally spread out. That's my thought.
Yeah, agreed. Do a couple of questions, because no doubt there'll be more developments on the UV stuff in weeks to come. Abhijit Mohan asks, is it fair for fans to assume a youth project such as ours needs to play like perennial title winners? Youth projects are marked by inconsistency as players grow. This is the path that we've chosen, and our target still remains top four, right?
So wait, what is the question? What is our target?
I think the question is it wrong to demand that we win the title year in, year out, and should we expect more inconsistency from a young team? Just like it is for everyone else who has a youth project.
I think that the winning back-to-back titles is hard.
Unless you cheat.
In any sport, winning back-to-back titles is hard. That's why you don't see it happen that often unless you're in the Premier League or Bayern Munich.
Or PSG.
Or PSG. PSG's lost it a few times in the last couple of years. Anyway. I think the goal, no matter what, is top four, with the stretch goal of winning the league. Because, I mean, the difference between fourth and second is like $5 million. You know, that's Ibra's salary. So
we put a feature. I apologize. Website.
That's his medical bills.
Need a bit more for our entire medical bill. there's a feature that went out last week, sort of. It was centered around mentality, but there was a line in that. This was on our website, by the way. Lorenzo wrote it, so go give it a read. There was a line in that that was like, it's actually more damaging to finish a point off one point off fourth than it is to finish 1 point off top. Obviously, you'd be heartbroken if you lost a title by a point, but if you miss out on Champions League by a point, it's like, fucking hell, that's 70 million euros at least. Mm-hmm. That is the Maldini said it himself. We need consecutive years of Champions League qualification to continue trying to bridge the gap. You know, we can't even necessarily do it. We need to get everything spot on, but that's all we can do to boost our hopes. I think top four is the target. Defending the title's hard, as Maddie says. Young players are going to be inconsistent. That is correct. But I do think that by winning the title, the goalposts shifted a tad towards the ambitious end of the scale. because we wanted to sign more ready-made established players to complement the young core that we've got, or at least players that are in their prime rather than sort of 19, 20-year-old backups that are...
I think there was more to it than that as well. Like, Madison, you're 100% right. Goals top four, stretch goal, Scudetto. Easy. That's the way it should be until we miss top four, I think. But because we won the Scudetto, and because on paper all the other teams got weaker, like, not a single person on earth predicted Napoli to be 50 points in first, you know, at halfway of the season, especially after losing Koulibaly and everyone else they lost, whose names I'm suddenly not able to remember. But they lost a lot of big players and replaced them with unknown players who just happened to be incredible. But nobody knew that. No one was watching Ruben Kazan, you know? Nobody knew these things. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
On paper, it was
they could also be a Piontek.
And I still think he will be. But on paper, you see all that and you think, well, we just won the Scudetto with this exact squad. You hear Maldini saying, yeah, we're two signings away from competing for the Champions League. We're going to get them. You know, that's we're hearing all this. So we're like, we're starting a dynasty. We're making our own 9-year run. You know, we're going to do our thing here because Inter has their financial problems. Juve's falling off. Like, Napoli's selling off all their people. Why would you not think we're going to win it back to back? You know, so while yes, it's hard, I think the expectation was there. And maybe that was just riding the high of winning the Scudetto, but there was a lot of talk in the summer that led you to believe that this is what we're going to do for the foreseeable future. And it didn't come true, and it couldn't have come true every year, but I think people are shocked to see that it didn't come true immediately. So I think that plays a role as well.
Agreed. Agreed with all of that. Christian Espinoza asks, maybe I'm wrong, but I remember seeing... the season before he came to Milan, Macias was a top five in successful dribbles in Serie A. What the hell has happened to him?
I think he's still doing fairly decent, isn't he? As far as dribbling?
You can look that up. But what I will say is that he is very frustrating player, you know? I don't think that given what we paid and what we knew we were getting, we could ever expect like double figures goals and assists out of a player like Macias. But I think in the Super Cup in particular, it was frustrating because he got into a lot of good positions and the end product, the cross, the final ball, even a couple of times when he took a shot on that was blocked, it wasn't there. He's struggling physically. You know, he's not missed loads of games like, say, Rebic, but... when Salamakers was out injured as well, and we sort of had to play Brahim Diaz there, we had to play players out of position to accommodate for it. I still do not understand why we spent the few million needed to turn his loan into a permanent. I think there must have been better solutions out there. But, you know, he did score 5 goals last season, I suppose.
I think AJ won money off that bet, and I'm about to win money off a bet as well.
Yes. So I'm looking at his overall rating for the last 3 seasons, and it's gone down just a hair each one. You know, his first season, his breakout one, and breakout at 30 years old, was 7.12 overall rating, and he had 68% dribbles successful. Then the following season, his first year with us, he had a 7.08 overall, and he only had 40% successful dribbles, so it dropped quite a bit. This year, he's on a 6.95, and his dribbles are at 10%. Definitely a big, big drop there. Yeah, so...
He's being found out a little
bit, I'm sorry. He's only had 10, which is 48%. I read that backwards.
He's only had 10? I mean, there you go. Is that an indication?
But last season, it was also 48%, and he had 30. Now, granted, there's half a season to go, and he did have some time injured, but the percentage has stayed the same there. He had 105 in the previous season, which was the 65% success. So, yeah. I don't know. He's definitely gone down, but he's also gotten older. He was 30. He's going to be 32 now. Like, you can't. He was never hitting, you know, top tier levels. It is what it is. So,
this is it. I mean, I criticized it at the time. I do not understand why we signed him permanently. He is definitely going to be one of those players who, like Castillejo, we really struggle to shift. You know, when it comes to it. Because at the end of this season, we'll be saying he's one of the players that he can go, possibly along with Salamakers, but at least Salamakers has had interest in the past. He's young. He has resale value. Macias has nothing. We're going to be looking to terminate his contract. And I don't understand it. Like, for a team with a youth project, that was an incredibly misguided. You know, you can look at the Florenzi one even and say, Florenzi did contribute. He's a leader. He's Italian. There are some plus points for him. he'd had two knee surgeries with us last season. And yet, and here we are surprised that he's injured again this season. Yeah. You know, we spent, we gave a rival a few million for him. And I just think that those were two baffling ones, but no doubt I'm going to get flack for that. Final question comes from Bilal Hussein. If we lose to Lazio, is this the beginning of the end for Pioli? Questionable tactics, player drops in form, tense and subdued atmosphere among fans. Realistically, how far can he take the team?
Brother, the beginning of the end was the day he signed that contract extension. That was the day after we lost to Torino 1-0 in the league. Was it 1-0 or 2-1? I can't remember. We lost to Torino in the league.
Yeah,
and he signed a contract extension the day after, and I thought, that's ridiculous. We're coming off of our first loss. It's an embarrassing loss, and we haven't achieved any of our league objectives yet, which was round of 16, winning the cup and top four. And since then, we've exited the cup in the round of 16. We didn't make it to the round of 16 in the UCL, so he accomplished that one, but it was after the fact. And it took us to the last match day to get that. And we've skid in the league. We're now further behind first than we were when he signed that extension. And mm-hmm. we've lost quite a few games. We've actually only had two good performances since then. One was the Monza 4-1 win, and one was the 4-0 Champions League win against Leipzig to send us to the next round. So
Salzburg, but yeah.
Yeah, Salzburg, sorry. Yeah. I always mix them up. But yeah, no, so yeah. It's not looking too hot. And I don't know. I think he's getting scared because he's getting colder and more direct in his interviews, and he's not really saying much, and he's not doing anything. He's not experimenting. And when he does weird things wrong.
He's so, out of his depth.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that winning the Scudetto for him was a stretch of his skill. I think he's a good manager. He's not a Champions League manager. He's not a top four manager. I'll support him until he really fucking digs us in a hole. So I'm not like...
Yeah.
Yelling.
Remember, before Zlatan arrived, we were not doing good with him. He was not a good manager for us. Granted, he took over from someone who was abysmal, but he wasn't like on a hot streak, you know? I don't credit him with turning us around.
But we won the Scudetto without much of Zlatan's contribution. We need him in and around again. Like, we need him in the dugout and just to kind of see us through, because I think the thing is, if you look at Pioli's managerial history, whenever he's hit a rough patch, it's ended with him being sacked. He's not been able to recover it. He started like a house on fire into burnout, didn't even last until the end of the season. You know, Lazio, he got them into the Champions League qualifiers where they lost, and then he didn't do well the following season. Fiorentina, again, a real bad patch of results ended his time there. And, you know, we need to see how he navigates through this. He's navigated us through difficult patches before. But, you know, my argument with this current stretch of form that we're in is, you know, you've got people blaming injuries, blaming a lack of help from the transfer market, blaming individual errors. That's all fine. But with Pioli, we already have a high standard set for him because he's navigated us through this before. You know, he won us the league title despite an injury crisis and despite all these issues we had with refereeing decisions and everything. And if he can't do that again, it's going to be perceived as a failure, when in actual fact, other people might look at it from the outside and say, well, this is just reverting to type. You know, what do you expect? Don't know. How far can he take us? I think a league title win is pretty far to take us when you consider what the reaction was when he was hired. I think they'll, I keep saying this, I think there'll be a logical time when we go our separate ways. And I don't know what the replacement looks like at the moment, but I think he's still got plenty of time to turn it around. I think he's got at least until the end of the season, rightly or wrongly.
I think it's because of that renewal. If they didn't sign that renewal, I guarantee he'd be gone.
I don't know about that.
I think so. I think this is a really bad stretch. A derby loss, a 3-0 derby loss, and technically a final, is bad, especially to cap it off after the collapses in the previous games. I think
you think he'd be gone now?
I think we'd be talking about it. Like, if he loses Lazio game, I think he's in. I think the longevity and the Scudetto is the only thing that would say he might get past this, but I think that renewal was not a good sign from the management. I think that was a concession that we're not going to be going for anything ambitious, being players or coaches. And it is what it is.
I think that they really thought that he could do it. He just won the Scudetto.
But I don't credit him with it. I mean, you look at what he was saying, that we don't worry about formations, that the players have the freedom to make their own decisions. So what are you coaching? You're basically saying the players made their decisions and they won it. You're just there. You're just their old man.
Nah, he didn't really say it like that. He just sort of said it like we worry more about areas to occupy rather than players having fixed positions, which I agree with. We played some really good football last season. Like the game that sealed us the Scudetto, we absolutely dicked Sassuolo. It could have been 10-0. I give him a good chunk of credit for what happened last season. And I still don't think he's had that window where you can look at it and say, right, we fully backed him there. You know, the summer market that came after him winning the league, after we'd lost Kessié and Romagnoli, and it wasn't good enough for a title winning team. And then we expect Pioli to work even more miracles compared to what he had last season, because I think we can all agree the squad is a little bit weaker. And it's like, I feel for him a little bit, as well as sort of questioning him and saying there are certain things he needs to figure out, as is his job as a head coach.
Yeah, but how many times do you see the argument against like managers like Pep and like Conte? Then you see it all the time. They're like, well, of course they won the league. They were, you know, they had unlimited money to buy whomever they want. So if the benchmark is doing it without unlimited money, without getting unlimited players, Pioli's not doing that. So, I mean, if we're going to slander coaches who can accomplish it because they get players, then we have to realize that if you don't get players, it's all on you to be the tactician and figure it out. And if he's not, then he's not. So,
and he was the value added, like, last season. That our squad wasn't the best squad in Serie A, and yet we won the league. Perhaps you could say we benefited from down years for other teams. But I don't think it's binary in the sense that you either get backed with a huge sum of money and therefore you have to win the league, or you don't get backed and you're still expected to go and win the league. I think that we're sort of on a spectrum where Pioli's somewhere in the middle. Like, he has had net spend behind him. He has shown a lot of positives since he arrived, don't get me wrong. But then we're still all a little bit paranoid. I think the word would be paranoid that it could all unravel, because how much of it was Zlatan? How much of it was momentum? How much of it was he stumbled upon a winning formula, mm-hmm. you know?
And the other thing that I'm going to is, why can't he get the most out of our signings? You know, CDK's been a flop. Why, as the manager, you should be able to get the most out of the guys you bring in, especially the young guys that, you know, everyone's saying, give him time, but everyone else is not needing time. You get Lookman slaughtering it at Atalanta. You got Cavra, whatever, you know. Like, there's all these players that are coming in immediately and just adapting. And every time we sign someone, it's you're not going to see them for 6 months because they need to adapt. And then they come in and they're not that great. So it's like, what are we doing?
Napoli are the team that debunk that argument, don't they? Like, the turnover they had in the summer with Mertens, Insigne going, Koulibaly, Fabian Ruiz, and, you know, brought in, like, Kim and Ndombele has kind of paid off. I saw the stat about Giovanni Simeone, who they signed as their backup striker, has given them 7 goals this season. And yet here we are, Origi's on 1. I'm looking at the time. Nearly at an hour 20. Been good, though. Been a good counselling session, this. I feel like we've got a lot off our chest. Thank you to everybody who listened this far. We'll be back next week, obviously, to talk about the two games that we've got and to look ahead to the busy schedule that we've got right up until we play Spurs in the Champions League. So all fun and games on that front. Drop us a like, comment, subscribe. That would be much appreciated. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep, Torbid 45. As I said earlier, I won't be able to watch the Sassuolo game. I should still be on the podcast, but yeah, I won't have any insight for that. But I'll be watching Lazio and, you know, doing our thing.
Maddie.
Edward_Toth.
Impressive first time point. Yeah, that was good. Thanks. That was very good. Yeah,
that's all I was thinking about while AJ was talking. I was like, all right, don't fuck up the point.
Gotta get it right. Thank you for watching, everyone. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Ante, eccolo Ante in area di rigore, Ante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce lo dà!